This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. More than 83,000 women were diagnosed with gynecologic cancer in the United States in 2010, and almost 29,000 died from it. Well, here with more on this is Dr. Rinki Agarwal. She's assistant professor in gynecologic oncology in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome. How are you, doctor?
Good, Linda, and thank you for having me here.
Let's begin by helping us all understand, what do we mean when we say gynecologic cancer?
We essentially mean cancers of the female genital tract. So we're talking about cancers of the vulva, vagina, the cervix, the uterus, ovaries, peritoneum. And we also include other female cancers that affect these organs when we generally think about it, because we end up helping in managing those patients.
So basically it's the whole female genital urinary tract, not the urinary tract, the genital tract.
The genital tract.
Right. So obviously each cancer is going to be somewhat different based on where it's located, but how in fact do they differ?
They're completely different in their presentation, in what organ is affected, and also how we manage and think about them. So a vulvar cancer, for example, if we're going to start from the bottom and work our way up, is a cancer which is essentially of the skin. So it's like a skin cancer, but it's also different in that we understand and we think that it's a slightly different presentation than other skin cancers in the rest of the body. And we treat it specific to the location that it has. So that's vulvar cancers. Those can be HPV related. HPV is a virus that...
human papillomavirus.
Is the human papillomavirus, thank you, which is sexually or otherwise transmitted and present in... the vast majority of the population is exposed to it at some point or another in their lifetime. The vast majority of people will clear it, and some people won't. And when it sticks around, it can affect the vulva, the vagina, as well as the cervix, and we see cancers related to that from HPV.
So there's been an increased incidence in that?
There's actually been a decreased incidence in some cancers. Mm-hmm. We'll touch on the cervix cancers in when we talk about that a little bit. But for vulvar cancers, that's also been associated with the HPV infection. And it's more commonly seen in older, in our senior population.
The vulvar cancer.
The vulvar cancer.
So let me get this straight. The vulvar cancer is called that because it takes place in that anatomical region.
That's correct.
But the cause of it, or the type of cancer cell, is more like a skin cancer.
Well, it is a skin cancer, but it is this viral cancer that we don't... Generally, skin cancers are not due to exposure to a particular virus, but this one...
With the
is
HPV.
Or can be.
Right. But how about the others, like when we talk about ovarian or cervical cancer or uterine cancer, do they have different cell types involving them?
They do, and they are all completely different and get thought about and treated in completely different ways.
So the only
So
the only thing in common that they have in terms of a category is that they all take place within the woman's reproductive tract.
That's correct.
And so we call them by their location, but in fact, each one is unique or uniquely
different. They are
different.
Very unique in their biology. So we started to allude to cervical cancers. Those are also HPV-driven cancers. The vast majority of them have the HPV virus detectable, if you were to test for it, in the cancer. And the cervix anatomically is, so in the body, is a extension of the uterus. If you were just looking at it, you may not be able to see a distinction, but that's the lowermost portion of the uterus. That is what you get looked at and tested when you have a pap smear annually. And that cancer incidence was very high probably earlier in the 1900s. And then with the development of what's called the Pap test or Papanicolaou test, the incidence reduced dramatically
because
of better screening.
Was found
very
earlier.
Effective screening. Mm-hmm. We've come to kind of a standstill in our improvement and reduction in rate of the cancer, because I think we're catching the cancers we would catch with the Pap test. And there's some conversation now of how you can improve on that. And that solution is probably going to present itself in a multitude of ways, which is to improve the test, maybe add another test in the form of the HPV DNA testing. The FDA has actually approved now the HPV DNA test for primary testing, so instead of the Pap smear. And then the other is really to have more consistent screening. So the patients I see more commonly with cervical cancer are people who've missed that Pap test, that have had issues with following up with physicians for lack of care, inability to access care, or other social reasons.
How about ovarian? And isn't ovarian at this point the most deadly?
Yes. If you think about ovary cancer, it is generally thought of as being a higher mortality cancer. So people will die from that disease if it's found. And it's certainly presented in the media in that sense. It's an interesting cancer in that it responds extremely well to treatment. So it's a responsive cancer. You typically find it at an advanced stage because the findings that suggest the cancer are so subtle. I hope we have a chance to discuss that. But it tends to be that once it is found, it is treated with a combination of surgery and chemotherapy and responds very well to treatment. So that rate of response approaches over 70%.
So why is it considered so deadly
if
it's responsive?
Because it tends to come back. So when we say response, that's that initial response, people getting better. And then in the time following, which could be in the range of months to several years, a number of people will have the cancer come back.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Rinki Agarwal, and we're talking about gynecological cancers. So what about uterine cancer? Is that equally deadly, or is that also responsive?
In fact, that is not. And probably that's related more to the stage that we find the cancer in. So uterine cancers are also called endometrial cancers. That's cancers of the lining of the uterus. That's what women typically menstruate from. And it's a cancer conversion of that lining of the uterus that we're talking about. Presents early because people have vaginal bleeding or abnormal discharge in a postmenopausal setting. So they've already stopped menstruating and then they're having some bleeding. And it comes to the attention of the gynecologist. They get a biopsy. It's a very easily accessible part of the body for a biopsy. And when we find it, it's typically stage one. So when they have treatment, the vast majority of people are found at an early stage and they do well.
So early detection is very important for all of these cancers. Let me get a sense of what are the symptoms, because they're different. I don't want to run out of time, and this is really important. How does someone suspect or know they might have any of these cancers? What are they looking for?
Differs on the bit depending on what part of the body you're dealing with. But with cervical cancer, you'd have bleeding, spotting, intermittent, in-between bleeding, in-between periods bleeding, bleeding with intercourse. With uterine cancers, typically because it is a postmenopausal cancer, it's bleeding or discharge after menopause. And it is seen in younger women where then they would have irregular periods or heavy bleeding. And with ovary cancer, we call it the silent disease because it's extremely subtle in its presentation. It fakes people out because it causes bloating, distension, increase in the abdominal size, legs swelling. People aren't able to eat well. So
those are more subtle, and like you said, they could be caused by any number of other problems, not even diseases.
Right. So patients and doctors get faked out because those symptoms are so generic and anybody could go through them at some point in their life. It's hard to find it.
You alluded to the screening devices. Right now, the main screening devices are really for cervical cancer. Is that correct?
And that's the most PAP effective.
And the HPV screening.
Correct. So those are what we're using for cervical cancer. Again, the gaps where we are missing cancers is because people have lack of follow-up.
Who in general is most at risk for these kinds of cancers? I mean, can you make a category of people? Is it age-related? Is it genetically determined? I mean, who's most at risk?
It is age-related to some degree, but pretty much anybody is at risk for the cancer. We do think of certain things to stratify people into a risk level. So for ovary cancer, that would be a strong family history of cancers. Ovary cancer in first-degree relatives, so that would be a mom or a sister. And then beyond that, it's a strong family history of ovary or breast cancer, even in relatives who are further removed from the patient.
Is that related to the BRCA gene? In other words,
that would be partly related. One of the genes that contributes to ovary cancer risk is the BRCA genes. Mm-hmm. But now we found a number of others that have probably not the same size effect. In other words, if you had the gene, the likelihood of developing cancer is probably highest in the BRCA genes. But these others also contribute to the risk to a smaller degree.
So if there's any family history, you should be on the lookout or at least be aware that you might be someone who could develop ovarian cancer.
Right. And it's not to keep it internally, but to actually talk to a physician because that's going to be key to early detection. I'm sorry. I advocate for people to come in and have a conversation and actually consider risk-reducing surgery because it's so important and we don't have good screening techniques for ovary cancer.
Yeah, there have been some very high-profile people who are electing to do that kind of surgery because they have a family history. I think Angelina Jolie recently has been talking about perhaps getting a full hysterectomy because of her mother's death from ovarian cancer. So clearly that is of great concern. But these other cancers, I hear what you're saying is that there could be some kind of symptoms that were not really clear. So in every case, if you have any of this vaginal bleeding, which is unexpected, or some pain, you should basically check with your doctor and make sure what's going on.
Absolutely. And that may help you find it early.
Very briefly, treatments. Are we mostly doing surgeries and chemotherapy and radiation? Can you just very briefly tell us?
So overall, those are the modalities that you would use, surgery and chemotherapy and radiation in specific cancers. And what we do and how we choose it is dependent on the findings and the extent or the stage of the cancer.
So those are really going to be on an individual basis in terms of what choices are being made. And currently, aren't they trying to do things that are more minimally invasive? So they don't do large surgeries. They do things laparoscopically or in a less...
We're doing a lot of our surgeries with the laparoscope using robotic technology now.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. Perhaps we'll come back another time. We'll talk more about the treatment modalities. Thanks
appreciate
again.
Your time.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your time. My guest has been Dr. Rinki Agarwal. She's assistant professor in gynecologic oncology in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Upstate Medical University.